Welcome to the Real Growth Podcast, where we meet with entrepreneurs, people going through real growth, people that are experienced in business. And we are so fortunate today to have Brad Vigasa nerding out. Brad, thank you for coming to the podcast.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Brad, I just want to go back to our origin story, where this idea of a business, explain to people what your business is, but where it all began.
Yeah, so about 2012, I was already employed through a big company, big media company. And I just had this idea for collectors, since I enjoyed collecting some things and then also buying and selling some things, that Facebook is great, but you always have groups. You hide in groups because you don't want to be teased for whether it's collecting action figures or whatever it may be, right? And then you had eBay. And so I found myself going to several different websites for all the things I needed. And I wanted one website where collectors could go to do everything and meet collectors and sell their stuff and show it off. And so I had somebody build a website for me, and they got most of the way there, and then they just decided they couldn't complete it, so they left me hanging. A couple of years later, started playing some semi-pro football, met a gentleman, and we decided to open up a shop because there really wasn't anything like it in town. So it was kind of like a niche thing, and nobody was really doing it. So decided to take a chance on a small square footage building. And that's actually when I think we kind of met, because you were helping us with that aspect too.
That was the Valhalla Shopping Center, right?
Right. Yep.
And when you got at the beginning stages of that business, was there other places that you found around the country or even in Minnesota that had kind of the vibe? Or was this something that you just through the internet just came up with the concept?
I think with the store, if you're a collector and whatnot, you always visit different shops just to see what they're like. I still think to this day, somebody that's opening a shop or somebody that owns a shop, you can recognize other shops and may want to visit those. Or if you're going to be in that surrounding area, you want to stop by to see how they're doing things. What could they do differently? And that's really what we did. We just really found a place, decided how we wanted things. The biggest difference that I really wanted to bring into a collectible store was cleanliness and openness. I didn't want it to be your typical, what I always say, and I know it sounds bad, but like garage sale-ish, dusty stuff, really compact, having to dig through things, even though there are some collectors out there that really enjoy that still. They like that aspect of getting the find. So, but that was really the biggest thing that I wanted to bring into a smaller store.
And with that original store, did you still have a job somewhere else, or did you go full-time into that shop originally?
Yeah, so I still had a full-time job. So at that job, I was part-timing at our job even. And I had another buddy that was running the store, and we had that shop for 2 years. And then after that, you know, you have to decide, what are we going to do? We're going to stay the same. We're going to extend. We got to get bigger. And I really wanted to get bigger because I've always wanted that thing, that memory for kids like I had when I was a kid, when my parents would take me to like Kmart back in Faribault. And I would be able to go up to that He-Man wall and pull that He-Man off there. Those are the memories I've always wanted to give the next generation. Like, hey, me and my dad, I remember every Saturday we go to Nerding Out and buy a Pokemon pack or whatever that may be. And we ended up finding a bigger place at a really reasonable rate. So just went all in and went for it. And that was June 2018.
And did that double, triple, how much bigger was it from
the original store? We went from 1,100 square feet to 6,000 square feet. So yeah, five times the size.
And at that point then, did you continue in your other job? Or at what point was that cut off where you're like, no, I'm going all in on this business?
On my birthday before we opened, I decided I was going to go all in. And honestly, when you have a family, you have kids, it's probably one of the scariest things, because I was at a job where I made six figures. So going from six figures to about a fourth of that is definitely a scary thing. But I had to take that chance. I had to believe in myself. I always say, you know, my dad passed away a couple years prior to that, but I always say that if my dad was still alive, at first he would have said to me, "You're crazy. Don't do it. Don't do it at all." But now I know he'd be really proud just because of what I've been able to accomplish and how I'm still doing it.
And do you, because we've had other people on the podcast, and one that stands out, do you think the reason that they tell you not to do it is twofold? They don't want to see you fail. Like, they only, you have a good thing going. And then the other thing, maybe they didn't go through that same journey and they've seen people that have struggled through that journey. You know, why do you think he may have said that?
You hit it on the head. Yeah. My dad was a safe guy. He was a teacher for 30 plus years. So consistent money, consistent job, everything about it, right? It was consistent. So for me, I didn't stay at jobs and I always worked commission. So he was impressed when I made a lot of money, but he was still nervous when I didn't, because that's commission. But yeah, that definitely, absolutely starting over, not having that security, not having the insurance right off the bat, would have probably blown his mind. Yeah.
And I think part of that too, you think of where you're at now and continually growing your store. And like you said, he would be extremely proud and be like, that's amazing. I wonder if our parents at times when you go off and do business and maybe they haven't, if they go, yeah, I couldn't have done it. You know, I think it takes
for sure.
And I think they've helped get you to a point where you feel comfortable in taking that risk to open your own business. You know, they're like encouraging and they've set up a foundation for you to have a good upbringing that gives you that flexibility of your mind to be like, I'm going to do this thing.
Yeah. I mean, I think ever since I was a kid, I was super determined. I remember when I was a little kid, we were building a deck or a Four Seasons porch on the back of our house. And my determination was I put a bed sheet around me like Superman and I jumped off the back door as if I was going to fly and I landed head first right on hard dirt. So right then and there, I think I pretty much lost some of my brain cells, but then I also realized how determined I am as a person.
And your father's like, yeah, he's crazy and he'll keep hitting his head. I'm going to try to prevent it as many. Yeah.
Anybody
as
many in my times family can possible. Tell you I'm crazy. Absolutely.
So talk about your store and what somewhat, I guess let's start at what's in the store. So there's so many people that are not collectors and for those that aren't collectors, what could they possibly find that might bring them back to their childhood or might ignite a new passion that they didn't know they had?
I always like to say nerding out is where pop culture lives. We don't specify in one thing. We're not just a toy store. We're not just a comic store like some places are. We literally carry everything pop culture. It could be newer vintage video games, toys, comics, board games, card games like Pokemon Magic the Gathering. We also carry tons of anime stuff. Literally, there is something for everybody there, I feel. We have a grown men when they come in, even if they don't collect it anymore. I used to have that as a kid. Oh my gosh, that brings me back. My mom threw all this stuff away. I can't even tell you how many times I hear grown men going, man, I wish I would have kept all this stuff. And we have the best feeling in the world is when you have those kids that hear about our store, come in for our bulk Pokemon, and those moms that never would have even stepped foot in our store that come in there just for their kids. And then next thing you know, they're back the next week or they're back the following week. And it's just so cool. And that's really what we tried to grow. And that's what I really wanted to encompass in it. Just as much as we love the everyday collector, we love the everyday non-collector too. And we want them to have a safe, clean space to be able to come and enjoy.
And with your space expanding, you had to bring a different business entirely to the fold. So talk a little bit about that business and then just what got you to open it.
Yeah. So when we found this building, we had the option to take the whole thing, which was actually 12,000 square feet. And in order to do that, we had to figure out what we were going to do there. So for me, you know, I'm not a Rochester native, but I've been here for 20 plus years and we have breweries, we have bars. That's about it. And restaurants, right? And Mayo. We needed entertainment. I didn't know how to bring it. I still haven't perfected it yet, but we traveled 3.5 hours to give this laser tag a try. And oh my God, the kid came out in me all over again. The guns look and feel real. It is just like being in Call of Duty in real life. You respawn back into games. There's different game modes. And as soon as we played, I'm like, we have to bring this. And so we brought it to Rochester. Unfortunately, literally 6 months after we opened, Corona hits. And I'm sorry, I think it was a year and a half into it, actually. And Corona hit. And we were just getting going with our laser tag. Our store was still good, but we had to completely shut everything down. And honestly, for a lot of businesses, when that happened, I don't care how much inventory you had, it was like starting from scratch all over again. You know, you had to relearn how to do everything. The world changed. It changed. I don't care what anybody says. It totally went online 100% after that, right? And we adapted really quick on the store side, but on the battleground side, we had no shot. We just couldn't be open. We couldn't go online. Nobody could go out of their house. So we were dead in the water. And so after that happened, we were able to reopen. And nobody wanted to still get out there and do the things. They were still nervous about, you know, germs and everything that was happening. So slowly we started getting some appointments. And then Walt's made it all shut down again. For entertainment, that is. Our store stayed open. And once we were able to get open again, it was still slow going, but then it's kicked off again. And we've really done a great job with learning what works, what doesn't work, and adapting. And we've brought in 3 new sports. So besides laser tag, we offer dodgeball, archery tag, and splatterball, which is like shooting little Orbeez out of automatic guns, which is amazing. So I hate paintball because of where I've gotten hit and how hard it hurt. And splatterball is just a fun, startling, doesn't hurt you, and no mess way of playing something like that is what it is.
So did you sign the lease then on the 12,000 square feet, or was it the 6,000? The 6,000 is just the store.
6,000 is just the store. We signed the lease on the whole 12.
And did you, obviously you believed in yourself, you're going to be able to make the rent payment, but did you know that you would be able to do it? Like, what was that feeling like signing on that lease, looking at that rent amount versus where you were coming from smaller space?
It's a big jump, but you know, this is the thing about being a business owner. You don't go into it, at least I didn't, fully aware of everything that's going to happen to you or even what to expect, right? And so I'm like, cost analysis for the most part of how I do it. And I'm like, this will work. This will be fine, right? Even with, because we had to take out a loan to get all the laser tag equipment because it's not cheap. And even with it, I'm like, as long as we maintain this, we'll be good. You know, you go into it thinking we're going to have these appointments and everything. You don't expect Corona. You don't expect any of that. And so that totally botches everything. But yeah, I mean, is it nervous? Yes, absolutely. The nervous needs to outweigh it for not only your growth as a business, but growth as a person. And I would say one of my biggest attributes is my hunger is the same today as it was when we first opened that business. And that's, I think, what is my biggest strength is my hunger.
And so let's go down that rabbit hole. So when you say about that hunger, and I would say I feel very similar in the sense of trying to build the business of, you know, you get over a hump and it's like, we're further than I ever imagined, but I still want to keep going. Mm-hmm. And it comes from just wanting to build something that's special, whether that's special to you individually, special to the community, special over multiple people's lives. So that's kind of thinking about what my hunger, that's what drives me. What drives you? Like, what gets you to get up every day and be like, I'm going to go back at this and I'm going to keep building it?
I think it's all that. I don't do it just for me. I do it for my kids. I've put myself in a position now where I'm able to leave them something behind if I were to pass. And honestly, I'm a really big customer service person. I love serving people. I love interacting, seeing the joy on their faces. If I didn't, I probably never would have started the Comic-Con in town. There is no money to be made there. It's the sure 5 to 6 thank yous I get from that. It means everything to me because there's so much work that goes on behind the scenes for that even that people don't realize. And I would say the same thing goes for our store. When you specify in one thing, if we just sold comics, I have employees that could just focus solely on comics, be experts in everything. With my employees, they are expected to do so many more things because they at least have to have a knowledge of everything we carry. They have to be able to help with online stuff because we do a lot of online still, live sales. So my employees are amazing, first off, absolutely amazing. The fact that they do what they do. But I think I'm getting a little off topic here too.
But what drives you? I mean, you're getting at that, it. It's like even them being able to have an opportunity to work in that type of environment didn't exist in many ways prior to you building what you built. So that's certainly something that drives
you. It's really fun. I have one employee that was in the hospitality industry prior to this, and hearing the stories that they went through and seeing what they do now, and it's their passion. I love that. I really do. Now, is it without saying that we don't have our ups and downs? Absolutely not. Every place does. Every genre, every business does. But just being able to say that I have these employees, they love what they're doing, and we're still growing, just is awesome.
What are some of the hats that you didn't recognize you would have to wear being a business owner?
Well, let's just go from where I was prior to. I was in the car business. I was a finance manager. I had one hat. Right? My hat was making sure I sold product and making sure paperwork got done. Now it's like, I can't even count how many hats I wear, but I go from a janitor to a shipping expert to a cashier to a bill person to you name it. And it's like, that's your hat. You have so many. And I would say I probably didn't expect at least 5 to 8 of them. That's a broad range, but you're even an accountant in some examples, you know. I still don't know how to do an account, but yeah.
And going down that rabbit hole related to what are some of the hats that you just don't necessarily enjoy, but you have to wear them as a business owner. What are some things that stand out where it's like, I didn't sign up for this. Like, I wanted to run this store and it's going to be a great place for the community. Why am I doing this thing? Like,
yeah.
What are some of those?
The accounting, accounting. Cause obviously at the end of the month, you have to worry about bills. You have to worry, and there are bills. Doesn't matter if it's distributors, rent, electric, right? And especially when you're an older building, it's even more because it's not as efficient. And that's where some of the stress comes on to you, and you never want to show that to customers. And that's a thing. I mean, being a business owner sometimes is very thankless. It's, you don't get employees coming to you thanking you every single day. Or maybe I'm just doing it wrong, but it's one of those things where you really have to motivate yourself because there aren't a lot of people that are going to sit there and do it for you. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. It's funny all the different things you end up doing if you really unfold it on a daily basis.
And yeah,
that's one thing I struggle with is just that focus, you know? So let's say you don't like to do accounting. You got to go do QuickBooks. You got to put in the bills. You got to then pay them. You got to then reconcile all those things and you don't like doing it. So then it's like, I'm not even going to focus on it when I do try to do it because I got all these other things that are going off in my head of what about that and what about this? And so it's a battle.
Perfect example is the building up in Invergrove Heights now. When taking that over, I got, not only did I have money to put down as a down payment, but they failed to explain to me that I had to pay second half taxes. And I was like, oh, that's another huge amount. Well, then now there's a shared road that I have to pay every single year I didn't know about. Plus, there's the water from the city I didn't even know. There's all these things you learn. And that was a thing in purchasing that building even was the fact that I learned so much on paperwork alone. And I was like, can we just make this where it's not like foreign? Because if you're just an average Joe, you don't know what half these words mean. Mm-hmm. You know, so it's constant learning.
What pushed you to expand to Invergrove and move? So we've skipped a little part of the story. So here you are in this 12,000 square foot space. You muster through COVID. The business is going back to normal in Rochester for you. What got you to go up to the Twin Cities area and try to open another store? What drove you?
I think I've always wanted to do another store. Instinct inside of me. When we were able to open back up, our live sales were so good that we were pulling in money we never had prior to. And it was a significant amount, like 10,000 plus every month. And I was able to bank some money based upon that. And when doing so, I had decided that I foresee people are going to want to get out of owning buildings. And then the riots happen. And I'm like, I think right now is the perfect opportunity. Businesses are failing and people that own businesses are getting nervous about it, which means they were being a lot more lenient with rent or how people were paying it, or even again, just wanting to get out of areas. And so there was a spot that was open for 5 years. And I was like, it's not right in the Twin Cities, which means maybe it's a little safer. And I liked everything about it. It had its own parking lot. It was bigger. It had a brewery right next to it. And it was right off the highway. So it checked a lot of those boxes that you could hope for. And we just decided to pull the trigger. We got a pretty good deal on that. Right off the bat, they wanted to sell. We told them we weren't in a spot to purchase. But we would be interested. So the beauty of that, which I think I came to you for too, because I've never done it before, was we actually did that kind of contract to deed thing.
Seller financing, right?
Yeah. So basically, we started off leasing the building. We said we'd do it for 1 year. We were cool with that so we could test the market, and then we would agree to purchase it after that year. Well, then they wanted lease for 2 years, purchase after. Agreed upon that. We showed that we could make it up there. And then, yeah, finally purchased it last September. So first building purchase I've ever done.
That's amazing.
Yeah, right? Yeah.
What was that moment like signing on the paperwork of like, okay, we own this thing?
How do you explain it? It's like getting a new car or having a baby. You know, it's a really exciting point in your life because it's like something you've never accomplished. And it's just like that feel good feeling. Even though you're writing a check for a huge amount and you know that's out of your bank account, it's like, this is really cool. Never done this. It's new. I own this.
Yeah,
that's mine. You know?
And now as we look to where you're at today, so you've, besides the physical store, besides, you know, the laser tag, you've also incorporated this event side of the business, which I fully don't understand. I just don't live in the world. So explain what a Comic-Con is and like what you're doing related to events and how that helps your business.
For sure. I think, again, a Comic-Con honestly is like, I like to call them pop culture expos. Typical Comic-Con is where they have a ton of comics. They have vendors, toy vendors, artists, and then you bring in like movie stars, TV stars. With ours, I wanted to do it again because I felt like this city had a longing for something like this. You can do Gold Rush and all of that, but this is just a different breed. Honestly, what it really does is, whether it's our parents, whether it's us, we grew up watching Power Rangers, whatever it was, it gives us the opportunity to meet these people that we grew up, whether it was idolizing or watching or enjoying. For kids nowadays, it's a lot of anime. So they watch anime, so you bring in the voice actors to those anime characters and they get super excited because some of these kids really can relate to these anime kids. And I think of a lot of it has to do with school nowadays. You don't feel like you're a part of a group or you don't feel like you're welcome. And so with anime, I think what that really does is you end up just getting into these characters and what they're about and you can relate to them. And so for kids nowadays, I think that's a big plus for them. But really, the pop culture event, it allows you to come in. You can come in for a day, come in for an afternoon, come in for a whole weekend. That's what's cool about it. And there's so much to see. You're going to see tons of vendors, whether, like I said, it's artists, toy vendors, trinkets, comics. We bring in movie accurate vehicles. So we, like last year, we had a giant Panther and Battlecat that people could sit on and take pictures with. We had the Ecto-1, the DeLorean from Back to the Future, the Jurassic Park Jeep. All these things you get to see that you see in movies and you can sit in them, take a picture. Movie stars, like I had mentioned, we do cosplay contests. So we give winners money and trophies. And that's really cool because they get to dress up as their favorite characters. So it's like Halloween, not on Halloween. And it's really cool when you see even adults do it because we adult too much. That's one of my biggest key things I love saying is that's why we're around because we adult too much. We need a break from adulting sometimes. Yeah. And that's what our store, that's what the Comic-Cons give.
Yep.
Yeah.
It's so true. Like you drew way more when you're age 5 to 10 than any other point in your life, unless you have a passion for it.
But right? If you go back now, you suck, but you realize it takes everything away.
Yep.
I actually started getting into drawing again.
Did you really?
Yep.
That's cool. Yep. This year, you're looking at expanding that event. So
yep.
Share about where that's going to be and what's kind of led you to just taking that next big leap of faith of trying to build it out.
For sure. So we still have the one in Rochester. That's Nerding Out Con. That's been going on. It'll be its 5th year. So we're going to have a big little anniversary thing this year, which is really cool and kind of momentum. And then For the last 3 years, I've wanted to bring one to the Twin Cities because we had a bad run of these bigger outfits that, whether it's their fault or not, have come for a year. People enjoy it and then they leave. So Corona hit, didn't take the chance, nor could we. The year after Corona, still a lot of things weren't coming back, but I decided to bring Nerdin' Outcom back because I really wanted it here and see if it could sustain. We moved it to the Mayo Civic Center also from the Graham. And then this last year, finally, I'm like, okay, it's time. It's time to do it. It's time to get people, someone local, something local, do everything like that. And so June 2nd through the 4th at the Minneapolis Convention Center, we are putting on the very first Minnesota Con. Cool. It will be, to me, mind-blowing because instead of 8 stars, I've got 24. And my budget is like, if this is Nerdin' Out Con, this is Minnesota Con. Right. So it's scary and cool at the same time. Twice as many vendors. I'm predicting and expecting the attendance to be 8,000 people plus. And if it is, that means we can do it again next year for sure. But I'm just really excited. I really am. And I was nervous. And it's the first time I always tell people I had a dream where I failed. Like, I don't know if I've ever had a dream like that. Right. We kind of talk about the reoccurring dream, but I had a dream one night that we had this show and it was open and there were no vendors and people were walking through the doors and I epically failed. So now I'm even more determined.
Now you're like, this is going to happen. And do you think part of that is in that business specifically, there's so much upfront capital and then it's like very fast, you know, if it's good or if it's not. Where I feel like your other business, it's that slow build. Like there is upfront capital, no doubt, but it's capital that can be paid back over time, that over time you can satisfy it, make tweaks, where this one's like money on the table, you're making the bet, and you'll know very quick if it's a good bet or not.
100%. Yep, 100%. And that's, you know, we kind of talked about a little bit beforehand, but even with this one, it's like you got to pay stars up front, you got to pay the convention center, which is a lot more, and you're looking at it going, oh, I hope I have that. But then what you hope to do is make it back to where year two would be easier, you know? Right. And like what you said with business, regressing a little bit with business, you always have the reoccurring. And with our line of work, some months it's more because some months you have toys and comics coming in and then you have Magic and Pokemon and it can be a lot more. And you definitely have a lot of growing pains with that. For a while there, we were doing so much online sales that I went heavy with toys because I'm like, well, we're selling so many and we're going to start with the online presence of a website and we'll start doing pre-orders and all this stuff. And I went heavy on that, didn't pan out. And you can't get scared with your losses. Your losses is growth. That's the biggest thing. If you never fail, you never succeed. Mm-hmm. Truly, it was the one thing that stuck with me was I think Dwayne Wade said, you fall to get back up. And it's very true because if you don't fall, you never learn to get back up.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
And I think about in business, you may fall, but part of that falling is that financial piece that you're then in a hole and you then have to have that determination to work back out of that hole.
Absolutely.
And you've been, amazing that resilience to just keep pushing and driving because you're going to continually have that risk. Hopefully there's a reward at the end of it.
Right. Yeah. And I appreciate that because honestly, sometimes it feels like you're just making it. Sometimes it feels like, did I do the right thing? Or, you know, a lot of people look at it and be like, oh, you've done really well because I have a second store or a van. Right. And it's like, I don't even feel like I've even scratched the surface. I feel like I'm still at square one because I'm not where I want to be. And that doesn't mean I want 10 locations. It means I want to be financially okay without loans and other things. Mm-hmm. And so for me, I strive to get there, but I don't just strive to get there and settle. I strive to get there and then be able to do more because of being there.
Mm-hmm. In business, you often have these financial deficits that you take a risk, it doesn't pan out, you're now in a hole. Like, what has allowed you to just keep pushing through and trying to get out of that financial burden you put on yourself? Like what drives you to just keep going at it?
I I don't know. I've had it in me ever since I've been in sales. It's because in the car business, you grow to learn that you can have your successes, but when you have your success, you just got to keep going for the next one. Every month is different retail period, but in the car business, you could have a 30 car month and then it doesn't matter the following day because it's a brand new month. So you could have a 30 car month, make a lot of money. But then if you only sell five because you just basically sat there and cheered yourself on for, you know, half the month, you're not going to do anything different. And so for me, whether it's fear or stress, happiness, excitement, I will always have that drive. It's just sometimes it's fed by one of those four. Sometimes it's fear because the bank account's so low, you just have to get there to pay your employees the next week. And then sometimes it's you did so well that month, you know you can at least breathe. And then all of a sudden you get a big bill in from a distributor. And you're like, come on. So it's like.
It's so true, isn't it? And then you get these harebrained ideas that you're going to expand to the cities. And yeah. You're going to do. And yeah. So like, that's another cap that I don't think we talk about very much as business owners, is that whole strategic thinking level that you are on a regular basis. Mm-hmm. And that's like out of the day to day. That's at this point of the conversation where you're like, what is my business going to do next? Where am I going to be next year? How am I going to have actions that lead me to this step? And that's another focus that.
And there's always something new around that corner. That's a thing. Cause like, you know, when we were down here, we signed a 5-year lease. So we've been good. I haven't had to worry. And then now that we're up there and it's purchased, I'm there until I want to be there. So I'm good there. But now back down here, we're just over a year left. So I'm already like, what are we doing next? Mm-hmm. What's the next phase? Are we going to get bigger? Are we going to get smaller? What are we going to do? Mm-hmm. Are we going to separate? How are we going to make this work?
Yep.
So it's like I said, there's always something around the corner. And I think, you know, entrepreneurship is a really like glamorous thing if you're not in it, because you'd rather try this than work for someone. Still to this day, I don't know if I could go back to working for someone. But I would always say to people that make sure you do your research, make sure you're well prepared, and start simple. Allow yourself to grow. Don't rush too hard into it to where you fail because you didn't grow.
Mm-hmm. I love that advice of starting simple. It's something that you proved it, Valhalla, doing it part-time in a small space, not a premier space. You were probably like, it's okay, it's not great, but you started. And that was the kickoff to yeah. what has become. And I love that advice, because we were talking about it just before the podcast. There's so much online where it's get rich quick and, you know, sign up for my course and in 2 months you'll be making six figures. And yep. It's just, I'm not discounting that it can happen. I just would say a higher percentage of people do it similar to your style of starting small, and that leads to long-term large success
yep.
versus a quick win or a short-lived income stream that you didn't have.
Yeah. And honestly, I would always say too, Gary Vee, I listen to him a lot and a couple other people, but a while back I heard Gary Vee say, if you really want to learn what it's like, go volunteer to work for someone, not to get paid, just go volunteer to work for them. They'll probably think you're crazy, but it gives you that opportunity. And so obviously do it when you're younger, because I couldn't do it for free now, but give yourself that opportunity to learn and make sure it's for you. And that's what I would say is, even if you don't want to volunteer, go work for a small business so you can learn some of the things and see if it is right for you. Because I guarantee you, when you work for a small business, you're still going to see those struggles if you're there enough. And those struggles will help you see if that's something you could overcome or get through. Mm-hmm. You still don't know until you actually get put in that moment. It's like anything else, I feel. Your adrenaline kicks in. Your fear kicks in. You have to go through it to experience it, to know it, to learn it. But anybody out there, I would definitely say you could always listen to somebody in a class and still think it seems cool. Go work for a small business. Just see what it's like on a day-to-day basis, because it is different than going and working for a Target where you have one role and then you can leave right away.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Yep. Which, there's freedom to that. There's freedom to being able to. And you probably have seen that freedom now, living on both sides of your career path.
You know what freedom's like? I haven't had it in a couple of years.
Yeah, I mean it was prior to getting into business and not recognizing being unaware of the freedom that I had relative to not having those worries, right? And hardest, I don't know that I could ever go back to not having them like you.
Right.
But at the same point, it's interesting to think about it and be like, what if I did stay on that path?
The grass is always greener. Right. The grass is always greener. It's like the one thing I'm most proud of is I don't know if I ever thought I'd get to where I'm at now, which is being able to balance. Because for the first couple of years, I couldn't balance. It was all work all the time. And being able to balance it to where now, if I'm with my family, I'm with my family, but you can still reach me, right? But if it's not important, if it's a distributor trying to get to me, or if it's a customer that just wanted to, you know, whatever it may be, hey, can you order me this? Because that's the thing about a small business. You're the face. People see you. They can't just order it. If they know you, they'll message you and see if you can order it for them, right? I may take that time off until I get back to work, or at least respond saying, hey, I'll be back in 2 days. I'll check then for you, or you can message the store.
And you now are at a level where you feel as though if you don't respond within 24 hours, the whole store isn't going to shut down and you're going to be closed for business. I think that's one of the growing pains you have to have, because you're so concerned that you're going to fail.
Yeah. And the thing about it is I think you kind of said it right, but not 100% right. And the only reason I say that is because as a person of customer service, you see how much customer service is failing. You see how much customer service we don't get anymore. You go somewhere and people are just sitting on their phones ringing you up, or no eye contact, the stuff that really matters to humans. And for me, I still pride myself if I have access to my phone. Like, I'm going to see Mario with my son here in about an hour, right? My phone will be off. Mm-hmm. Because one, I like that moment to myself, but my son deserves it too. Mm-hmm. But I guarantee you, once that movie's done, I'm going to pick up my phone and I will respond to anything. It may not be, yeah, I'll get you that right away. It may be, hey, message the store, or can I get back to you tomorrow? That's a courtesy. To me, that is customer service still. And that's why, yes, I agree with you that it can wait. But in the same aspect, there's so much competition out there. You let it wait, you could miss it. Mm-hmm. So I want to at least be courteous and let them know they're on my mind, that I am acknowledging that they got to me.
Yeah.
If that makes sense.
Yeah. And now with technology, there's so many ways to acknowledge the message came in a short amount of time. Like, I talk about voice memos to people every once in a while as a quick response when you, even like with Facebook, the thumbs up, like, just, it's silly now how easy you can just acknowledge that something. Thumbs up.
That is like the polite version of a middle finger to me. That's what that is. Honestly,
I'm sorry if like, I said to him,
if somebody gives me a thumbs up, I'm like, you really care about me just that much, huh?
Awesome.
No,
I've probably given you several,
but it's okay. I mean, even I hate doing voice text, even though it's like the easiest thing in the world to do.
Yeah.
And it's the quickest, because I don't have a really good reading voice that you can understand everything I say. There was this one time that we have our own inner messenger for work, right? And there was this one time an employee said something and I messaged back, and it ended up coming out where it said something like, I will take advantage of you. Okay. And I'm like, I don't proofread. I just send. That's my biggest fault.
Yeah.
And I went back and I looked after the fact and I'm like, oh shit, that's not what I meant. Sorry.
So yeah, it can go both ways. Well, Brad, thank you so much for just joining on the podcast. It has been such a joy to learn more about your journey. One thing that I would love out of this podcast is that there is people that are at their home. They have stuff in their basement that could come to your store. Why should they dig around? Why should they find it? Why should they come into your store, bring those things to your store for unlocking value or just helping other people find them?
Yeah, I appreciate you saying that and asking that, actually. The reason I would say is because I would say we are very fair with what we pay out. Not only that, but we will walk you through the process. We will walk you through how we got the value, why we think it's worth that. And it's up to you if you want to do that sale or trade with us. But in the end, we're going to make sure you know everything you need to about it. And we're going to give you accurate information, and we are going to be 100% fair. I've even done testimonials now where when people message us about taking in collections and they bring them in, I message them back, ask them how we did, and ask them if we can put it out there, because I really want people to see that we're not the type of place where you bring your collection and we just go, we'll give you 300, right? We're going to be like, hey, we can give you 300 on this. This is why. This is what we're going to have to do to it. We're going to have to clean it. We're going to have to replace this. We're going to have to list some of this online, which then we lose 15 to 20%. So we're very thorough and we're very upfront with what we do and how we do it.
Very cool. And for MinnesotaCon, remind everybody when that is and where they can go find out more.
June 2nd through the 4th, Minneapolis Convention Center. You can get your tickets today at MinnesotaCon.com, or you can still get them at the door. But if you get them now, you don't have to worry.
Awesome. Thank you, Brad.
Yeah, thank you.